Pastoral Care by St. Gregory the Great, Book 3, Chapter 26. How those are to be admonished, with whom everything succeeds according to their wish, and those with whom nothing does. Differently to be admonished are those who prosper in what they desire in temporal matters, and those who indeed covet the things that are of this world, but yet are wearied with the labor of adversity. For those who do prosper in what they desire in temporal matters are to be admonished, when all things answer to their wishes, lest through fixing their heart on what is given to them, they neglect to seek the giver, lest they love their pilgrimage instead of their country, lest they turn the supplies for their journey into hindrances to their arrival at its end, lest, delighted with the light of the moon at night, they shrink from beholding the clearness of the sun. They are therefore to be admonished to regard whatever things they attain in this world as consolations in calamity, but not as the rewards of retribution. But on the other hand, to lift their mind against the favors of the world, lest they succumb in the midst of them with entire delight of the heart. For whoever in the judgment of his heart does not keep down the prosperity he enjoys by love of a better life, turns the favors of this transitory life into an occasion of everlasting death. For hence it is that under the figure of the Idumeans, who allowed themselves to be vanquished by their own prosperity, those who rejoice in the successes of this world are rebuked, when it is said, "They have given my land to themselves for an inheritance with joy, and with their whole heart and mind." In which words it is to be observed that they are hit with severe rebuke, not merely because they rejoice, but because they rejoice with their whole heart and mind. Hence Solomon says, "The turning away of the simple shall slay them, and the prosperity of fools shall destroy them." Hence Paul admonishes, saying, "Those that buy as though they possessed not, and those that use this world as though they used it not." So may the things that are supplied to us be of service to us outwardly, to such extent only as not to turn our minds away from desire of supernal delight. And thus the things that afford us succor in our state of exile may not abate the mourning of our soul's pilgrimage. And we, who see ourselves to be wretched in our severance from the things that are eternal, may not rejoice as though we were happy in the things that are transitory. For hence it is that the church says, by the voice of the chosen ones, "His left hand is under my head, and his right hand shall embrace me." The left hand of God, to wit, prosperity in the present life, she has put under her head, in that she presses it down, in the intentness of her higher love. But the right hand of God embraces her, because in her entire devotion she is encompassed with his eternal blessedness. Hence again it is said through Solomon, "Length of days is in her right hand, but in her left hand riches and glory." In speaking then of riches and glory being placed in her left hand, he showed after what manner they are to be esteemed. Hence the psalmist says, "Save me with your right hand." For he does not say, "with your hand," but "with your right hand," in order, that is, to indicate, in saying "right hand," that it was eternal salvation that he sought. Hence again it is written, "Your right hand, O Lord, has dashed into pieces the enemies." For the enemies of God, though they prosper in his left hand, are dashed to pieces in his right. Since, For the most part, the present life elevates the bad, but the coming of eternal blessedness condemns them. Those who prosper in this world are to be admonished to consider wisely how that prosperity in the present life is sometimes given to provoke people to a better life, but sometimes to condemn them more fully forever. For hence it is that to the people of Israel the land of Canaan is promised, that they may be provoked at some time or other to hope for eternal things. For that rude nation would not have believed the promises of God from far off, had they not received also something near at hand from him that promised. In order, therefore, that they may be the more surely strengthened unto faith in eternal things, they are drawn on not only by hope to realities, but also by realities to hope. Which thing the psalmist clearly testifies, saying, "He gave them the lands of the heathen, and they took the labors of the peoples in possession, that they might keep his statutes and seek after his law." But when the human mind does not follow God in his bountiful gifts with an answer of good deeds, it is the more justly condemned from being accounted to have been nurtured kindly. For hence it is said again by the psalmist, "You cast them down when they were lifted up." For in truth, when the reprobate do not render righteous deeds in return for divine gifts, when they here abandon themselves entirely and sink themselves in their abundant prosperity, then, in that whereby they profit outwardly, they fall from what is inmost. Hence it is that to the rich man tormented in hell, it is said, "You in your lifetime received your good things." For on this account, though an evil man, he here received good things, that there he might receive evil things more fully, because here, even by good things, he had not been converted. But on the other hand, those who indeed covet the things that are of the world, but yet are wearied by the labor of adversity, are to be admonished to consider anxiously with how great favor the Creator and Disposer of all things watches over those whom he does not give up to their own desires. For a sick man, whom the physician despairs of, he allows to take whatever he longs for. But one of whom it is thought that he can be cured is prohibited from many things that he desires. And we withdraw money from boys for whom, at the same time as our heirs, we reserve our whole patrimony. Let then those whom temporal adversity humiliates take joy from hope of an eternal inheritance, since divine providence would not curb them in order to educate them under the rule of discipline, unless it designed them to be saved forever. Those, therefore, who in respect of the temporal things which they covet are wearied with the labor of adversity are to be admonished to consider carefully how, for the most part, even the righteous, when temporal power exalts them, are caught by sin, as in a snare. For, as in the former part of this volume we have already said, David, the beloved of God, was more upright when in servitude than when he came to the kingdom. For when he was a servant, in his love of righteousness, he feared to strike his adversary when taken. But when he was a king, through the persuasion of lasciviousness, he put to death by a deceitful plan even a devoted soldier. Who, then, can without harm seek wealth or power or glory, if they proved harmful even to him who had them unsought? Who in the midst of these things shall be saved without the labor of a great contest, if he who had been prepared for them by the choice of God was disturbed among them by the intervention of sin? They are to be admonished to consider that Solomon, who after so great wisdom is described as having fallen even into idolatry, is not said to have had any adversity in this world before his fall. But the wisdom that had been granted him entirely left his heart, because not even the least discipline of tribulation had guarded it. End of chapter 26.